Well, rainy, foggy, and dark might be three of my least favorite ways I want to greet the day at 12:05 on this Tuesday, January 6th. I mean, I don't know how to put lipstick on this pig, Michael.
I cannot remember it ever being this dark in the middle of the day. It almost looks like it's 7 or 8 o'clock in the evening time.
And my weather thing says sleet forecasted in a wintry mix with a high of 39, a low of 31, supposedly 37 degrees right now.
There might be some sleet out there. There's no way of knowing because you can barely see anything.
And that in itself is bad. Well, with all of that aside, let me just say we've got relentless positive radio with the team. Michael Parsons, our executive producer, Danielle Mason running all the equipment, Rich Luzinski running over the traffic and weather. Well, running over, that doesn't sound good for a guy doing traffic. Yeah, so keeping an eye on WJR traffic and weather first.
Job security.
Yeah, doing a nice job. And we do have relentless positive radio at a time when it's not always easy to do that. But we're doing the best we can. And it's not bad, really, in the rainy, foggy, dark conditions that we find ourselves. You can stream us at WJR.com from anywhere in the world, and people do. Welcome. You can podcast us if you can't be here noon to 2 because you're on your way to lunch right now and you're going to go inside, but don't miss the show. Podcast us. Go to WJR.com. Look at the little bottom on the screen there. It'll say podcast, and you'll be able to follow the show very simply, very quickly, too, on the podcast. What's news? Let's see. We know Maduro pled not guilty in the U.S. courts. We knew that yesterday. This cash aid for new mothers expanding to Detroit that our new mayor has said we're going to be getting. That's a pretty cool-sounding thing. I don't know how they pay for it. Mayor says popular RX kids program coming to Detroit.
Yeah, I believe it was started by Mona Hanna-Attisha, who we remember as being...
We had her on from the beginning on the Flint water crisis.
And I think they tried it out as a pilot program in Flint, and it worked well, and they're trying to bring it here to Detroit. But I guess, remember how at the beginning of the year a whole bunch of money was slashed out of the budget up in Lansing? I guess some of that funding for that got slashed as well. So they're trying to find ways to backfill those shortcomings in the funding. But
there's no question all of this has to be looked at now very carefully. And all money, all government money going to wherever it's going, thanks to Minnesota, they're going to have to everyone's going to have to take a better look and make sure money isn't being stolen, because it is being stolen. Whenever there's a lot of money, there's a lot of theft and a lot of problems.
Right.
I mean, that's just the reality that we've learned to live with, I think.
And I'm sure in these big bureaucracies, there's a lot of places to hide when you're skimming money off the top. So it's a shame when that happens, because there are worthy programs that get at least put on hold.
I see in today's newspaper, GM sales slip in Q4. But rise overall in 2025 with the growth thanks to gas trucks and those big SUVs, which are very profitable.
Right.
So some are thinking we're going backwards. Others are saying we're going exactly where we're supposed to go based on the market.
Well, wasn't GM one of the first ones to say, okay, the demand isn't there yet for all these electric vehicles the way we thought? So they pivoted back to the gas engines, didn't they?
Well, after they heard from their dealers and did not listen to them immediately, from what I've been told by dealers, but then did figure out that people weren't interested in the all-electric vehicles. They were interested in the so-called hybrids, part gas, part
right.
electric.
Which was probably the missing step that they skipped, because I think
and then they went back to it,
right.
or went to it, whatever, if not back to
right.
it. And then now things are, as we used to say, although I don't think I ever used this expression all the time myself, Things are now hunky-dory. What the heck does that mean? Have you ever said, Danielle, have you ever said hunky-dory? I am guessing no.
Never.
Yeah. Definitely not of her generation. Maybe, Mike, maybe not of yours.
I've heard hunky-dory, but I think I heard it on the Brady Bunch. So I don't know if I've ever
used it. Which
is,
of course, where you learned much of what you know.
Right.
And use on this show, which we...
Here's a story of a host named Polly. That's all I got so far.
Well, it's not bad. It's not bad. Car makers warned of slowdown risk in our Detroit news today. Why America stopped building the starter home. Oh, here's a story I saw earlier, and it reminds me of when I used to go to all the international auto shows. And I went to the international auto show in Japan many, many years ago. Eric Granowitz was our engineer then. He was on the road engineer.
I remember Eric well.
He was great. I mean, he kept contacts. He knew if the phone lines weren't up, he knew how to get them fixed, no matter where, whatever country we're in. Anyway, so I'm flying in, and I'm going to be exhausted. It's a long flight. My arms were tired. And I'm
take
flying
my wife,
in.
Please.
I get there, and he goes, I need you to get up at 4 o'clock tomorrow morning. I go, I just got here. I am exhausted. We're not on the air at 4 o'clock in the morning. What are you talking about? We've got to go to the fish market. And I said, what? Trust me, Paul. We've got to go to the fish market. So I did. And he was right. And you know, I can't think of which one it was, but the head of GM. Oh, which one was it? There have been many that I've worked alongside.
Wasn't Rick Wagner, was it?
Was not Rick Wagner. Okay. It was before Rick Wagner.
Okay.
I think his wife's name was Lydia. Oh, this is terrible.
Oh, Lydia's anyway, husband.
Yeah, Lydia's husband, who was running GM at the time. At the time. And he was there at the fish market.
Because really?
He wanted to see it also. In fact, later, I was at a Pokemon store. And the head of Cadillac was there.
Wow.
And I go, hi, how you doing, blah, 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 which led to a phone call to our management back home at WJR saying, how did Paul get all the GM executives' schedules? And they said, what are you talking about? Well, first he's at the fish market with our CEO and chairman there, and then later he's at this store, this Pokemon store.
Right, you're stalking
him. And our head of Cadillac is there. How'd he get our... And they said, well, first of all, Paul talks to them all the time. He doesn't need their schedules, and he doesn't have to wait till Japan to talk to him. It's just a coincidence. Anyway, I say this because in the Detroit News, read the whole story. You know, tuna, which we think of Charlie the tuna, and we think of those little cans of tuna fish.
Right.
Tuna's... They're large fish. They're really big fish. And tuna, of course, is the best of the tuna is used in sushi. Do you know that a bluefin tuna, and there's a picture of it in today's Detroit News A10 business section. There's a picture of a bluefin tuna that just sold. Are you sitting down? I know you are. I can see you're sitting down. But I had to say it.
Right.
It just sold for $3.2 million at that Tokyo fish market. $3 million for a fish.
What are they going to eat it? Are they going to mount it?
They're going to put it out to stud. Right? No, I'm telling you, it's going to be sushi before you know it, and that's a lot of sushi that they can get to say it's worth $3.2 million.
Yeah, I wonder how much they're going to charge for, you know, each tuna roll from that fish.
$10,000. No, but it's amazing, and the fish market is fabulous, and so is sushi. So there you are.
Was it Jack Smith you were thinking of? Rich Kate?
Yes,
Rich Kaczynski came in with
yes,
that.
Yes, it was Jack.
Yes,
it was Jack.
Good
Smith.
Job,
thank
Rich.
You, Rich. Good job, Rich. Rich is on top of all that. You know, I've never been a big fan of bats. I mean, who wants to embrace bats? But listen to this out of the New York Times: bats eat a lot of insects. After a fungal disease decimated three species of bats in North America, farmers in affected areas had to increase pesticide use by 31%. But guess what else? When they did that, infant mortality rose 8%.
Wow.
So who would have known the bats count? and matter. One last thing. I know the music's playing, and poor Danielle is looking at the schedule saying, well, he's done it again. We may not get out at 2 o'clock when we're supposed to, but we're going to. I promise you, Danielle. But a campaign to provide every student in Peru with a laptop computer. What did that do? Any guesses?
Improve test scores?
Did nothing to improve cognitive skills or academic outcomes. It got everybody a computer. It did nothing. Just a little thought there for those of us raising money for people who want to get computers to everybody. That was in Peru. Maybe things are different there. But we're underway on this rainy, foggy, dark Tuesday, January 6th on WJR. Relentless Positive Radio on your way to making each and every day count, because you know what you need to be reminded, as do I. Each day is a gift, and I want to thank you, too, for choosing to be a part of the best and brightest audience in all of radio. Starting the new year off right with the one and only editorial page editor of the Detroit News, co-author of the Civility Book, A Guide to Building Bridges Across the Political Divide, along with his pal, Stephen Henderson and Lynn Gallagher. Nolan Findlay is here. Nolan, Happy New Year.
Good morning, Paul.
Well, good afternoon. I don't know if you're somewhere else in the world, but that's okay. It's easy to do.
I haven't had lunch yet, Paul. It's not afternoon until I've had lunch.
All right. What do you usually have for lunch?
You know, whatever's left over, Paul. I love a liverwurst sandwich.
Nothing like a leftover liverwurst sandwich. Okay. Well, very good. Very good. It's got to be, in your lifetime, one of the best times ever to be doing what you're doing, I would think, with everything that's going on.
No shortage of news, is there, Paul?
No shortage of news to write about, talk about. What was that last thing you said?
I said we've got a surplus of news.
Yeah, surplus, unfortunately. I'm worn out already as I hit the airwaves. Why am I worn out? Why do you think I'm worn out? I'm worn out because I just watched the president address some group of a retreat of Republicans. Look, I shouldn't tell you who I voted for, but I voted for him. I wasn't going to vote for her. I mean, she just wasn't in any way, shape, or form ready for the position. And he shows signs of being crazy, but shows a lot of signs of brilliance. And there are a lot of things he's doing that are good. But man, when he gives a speech, and then when he says to the crowd, "You guys mind if I go off this teleprompter? Do you mind if I go?" Which of course, yeah. And I'm going, "No, stay on the teleprompter, please, Mr. President." He goes off the teleprompter, man. We're off to the races. I forgot why he was even there.
I tell you, I've seen him give 4 live speeches, and I haven't made it to the end of any of them yet. So I've been in the audience for 4 live speeches, and I usually get about 70% through, and I don't know what – I don't know about his bladder, but I got to get to the John by the time we get to that point.
Well, anyway, so he did his thing today, and they'll judge it the way they judge it. That we know that the left media won't like it, and the right media will, and God bless them. I do not understand this idea of basically threatening Greenland. I don't get that. I mean, I don't understand if we need to be there for strategic and security reasons, I bet we could have worked that out without any problem.
You know, these are friends. You know, this is a friendly nation.
Right.
It does have some, we're writing about this in an editorial tomorrow. It does have some considerable strategic and security elements to it. I mean, it is an important landmass, but doesn't mean we need to grab. We are in any way justified in threatening them that we're going to grab their territory because we think it's important to us. That's not how we operate, for goodness sakes. I mean, this isn't Venezuela or any of the other nations that are in turmoil. This is a stable territory, and it belongs to Denmark and not us. And like you said, we would be much better off working with the NATO and the countries in that region and developing a security strategy for Greenland rather than threatening to grab it just because we want it.
It's building friendships, bridges of relationships
Yes.
are going to be, even though he doesn't think so right now, will be very important with future conflicts in this world. I'm just saying, at the end of the road, you don't want everybody turning on the United States and thinking this is why we're picking on those guys. But
Well,
I just.
from the beginning, he's felt that he's the answer to every problem. And you've seen that with his moving federal troops into crime-ridden cities. And you see him in, crafting a plan to run Gaza long term. I mean, what happened to this idea that we're not going to get involved in foreign entanglements any longer, that we're going to put America first? We're not going to intervene in the affairs of other nations. And I mean, right now he's standing astride the globe and wants to run the whole thing.
I don't understand his thought process. The
I don't
United
either.
States cannot, I mean, the United States should not conquer Greenland. So enough on that.
No.
I mean, that's just,
Nor should
you
we
would
be
be.
the world's policeman. I mean, he said that himself. We don't want to be the world's policeman, and here we are, policing the world.
Well, there's something to be said about the way we do something. For example, we've had other movements to straighten out immigration. We've had I have audio that's online. I don't have it right now, but of other presidents saying how nobody in America wants immigrants to come into this country illegally, and they're here
No.
and they're taking our resources and we need to get them out. Yet when we do it now with this president and with the Department of Homeland Security, you've got people who are turning on them that generally I don't think would have turned on them. And now the story of the Department of Homeland Security accusing, what is it, Hilton Hotels
Yeah.
of canceling their reservations. I mean, that's bad
Right.
when a hotel has got money in the books and locked in, and they go, oh, geez, it's Homeland Security. We don't want them staying here.
No, it's un-American, and they should be punished by consumers for it. I mean, these are people who are out there working to secure our nation, working to secure our borders, and you have some hotel franchisee saying, "No, you can't stay here." You've seen it other places where they won't serve ICE agents, they won't serve meals to them, won't allow them in their restaurants. I mean, come on, we all remember the horrible sight of people streaming into this country four or five abreast, like they were walking into a sports arena, just illegally coming into our country by the thousands. And
Right.
that's not happening today, and it should have never happened. And yet we were always told, well, there's nothing we can do about it. So you got to credit Trump. He did something about it.
Absolutely
And,
right.
I think we should be glad he's doing that. And, yeah, there's all kinds of sob stories and horrible stories about people getting who are working and settled in this country, who are getting deported. That doesn't change the fact that they didn't have a right to be here.
Right. And that they've because they're here, they're here illegally. They broke the law already.
They
So
did.
these
They're
people who say,
criminals.
"Oh, they're rounding up these law-abiding citizens." No, they're not. They're not law-abiding if they broke the law to
No.
get here. It's hard
And
to.
it's to their benefit too that we make sure everybody who's here is here legally. I mean, they risk being exploited, being coerced into basic slavery, miserable living conditions. Illegal immigration is not good for anybody.
Even for those people who are quote unquote lucky enough to make it into this country, as you just pointed out, they fall into all kinds of traps and taken advantage of and all kinds of horrific things, leading in some cases to death and stealing children and turning people into prostitution. The list goes on and on. No one should have to be convinced that what ICE is doing is the right thing, following what, in fact, Congress has told them to do. They are doing their duties. And how people so easily turn against them is very disheartening, at the least.
There's no other country in the world where you can just show up and say, I'm coming in, whether you like it or not, and I'm going to stay. I mean, name a country where you and I can do that today.
None. So none is right. On the other hand, too, this is a great country, as it was Reagan who said in one of his last speeches, you can't go to France. No matter how much time you spend there, you're not a Frenchman. You can't go to, he named a bunch of countries. But when you come to America legally, you become an American. There's no other country in the world you can do that in either.
And you add your talents, your resources to the whole, and we all benefit.
Correct. Nolan Findlay, editorial page editor, the Detroit News, co-author of The Civility Book, A Guide to Building Bridges Across the Political Divide, must-read book. All right, thank you, Nolan. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks, Paul.
We continue in Focus with Paul W. Smith on WJR. And thanks to my good friend Mike Rogers, veteran, former FBI agent, former chairman of the U.S. Intelligence Committee, businessman, Republican Senate candidate extraordinaire, doing very well, to make people understand very clearly and easily from his expertise his thoughts on the whole Maduro capture and why it's very important and, in his opinion, very legal. Congressman Rogers, it's always a pleasure, my friend.
Paul W., Happy New Year. I hope you and Kim had a great New Year celebration and are welcoming a hopefully blessed and prosperous New Year.
Well, that's very nice of you to say. We're certainly doing our best with that, and I certainly hope that the two of you are doing very well as well. And I'll get back to that because I want to hear what you guys did over the holidays, and you and Christy, I need to let people know, through your expertise and experience, Chairman of the U.S. Intelligence Committee, to lay out for them, first of all, what I've said several times now is, what an incredible military situation this turned out to be. How great was our military in making this happen? It's phenomenal. I don't know that anyone else could do this.
Well, there is really no other country in the world that could do what our special operators did to extract Maduro and his wife and bring them to justice. Remember, they are indicted, so they are wanted by the United States for criminal activities. So nobody else could do it. But here's the thing people have to remember. This was an intelligence operation. They had an exact duplicate of the facility they were going in and built it out, much like they did with Osama bin Laden. They had an exact replica built out through great intelligence collection so that our operators, when they got there, didn't see anything that looked a little funny to them. That's great intelligence. It really is. Then our ability to take out the air defense systems so that our helicopters and other aircraft could get in and get out without getting attacked or losing an aircraft on the way in or out, also an amazing feat by our intelligence operator. So you think of all of the, they call them all of the int, all the intelligence, geoint, you know, what was going on the ground, space pictures, intelligence from human sources, all of that put together to have that one operation go the way it did. Lots and lots of people involved. Unbelievable. That's why no one else can really do this. And then, of course, the sheer courage and bravery and patriotism of the folks that showed up. And by the way, they were guarded by Cuban-trained special forces guards. They weren't even, most of his guards were not Venezuelan. They were Cubans.
Right.
And dispatched them pretty quickly. The reports I saw were as many as 32 of these very highly trained Cuban special forces who were his bodyguards did not fare well against the United States of America.
And to be able to grab this couple as they were trying to enter their safe room and keeping the door from closing. But even if they had closed it, they brought all the torches and everything they needed. They were so prepared. They would have cut through the steel doors in seconds. Be that as it may, it took you to remind us that this guy was, by a grand jury in the United States, indicted back in 2020. And you point out what no one's talking about, and that is the way this cuts into what the Chinese have planned in Venezuela and what the Russians have been using Venezuela for. Nobody talks about that, but this is a very important reality. Explain it to our WJR listeners.
Yeah, so first of all, think of this, Paul W. You have somebody who was using a nation state to send death on boats and ships and mules and using the Mexican cartels for drugs to kill our kids in this country. That was what the indictment was for. And he was doing that purposely. It was not only just to make money, it was, but they hoped to do real harm to cause chaos in the United States, number one. Number two, these are two really big benefits for this. The Chinese were building out satellite propulsion systems in Venezuela, meaning they were going to launch satellites. Well, if you know anything about launch vehicles, if you're launching a heavy thing, it's like launching a bus into space. You can also use those pads and that technology for other types of missiles, including ballistic missiles, intercontinental missiles. And so the Chinese were investing in all of that to have a platform that is very close to the United States. Same with the Russians. They were using it not only for their nuclear sub-stops to refuel, to get all the logistics taken care of, repairs. They were also doing it with their strategic bombers, which, by the way, have nuclear weapons on them that are targeted toward the United States. So think of all of the things that just got lost by people who are trying to do us harm and gain a foothold and a strategic advantage in our hemisphere in Venezuela. And people say, well, what does that mean? Think of a missile that gets launched from North Korea. We have a way to detect it. If that thing gets launched from Venezuela, our time for reaction is so minimal. So you can't really have the Chinese and the Russians putting the strategic efforts, weaponry, bases, training in our backyard really, really dangerous. So it solved three pretty big problems with one fold swoop here.
A Republican Senate candidate Mike Rogers with us, and he knows what he's talking about as the former chairman of the U.S. Intelligence Committee and all of his other experience. And for those people belly aching about this, which it's all politics and all liberals, well, you can't just go in and kidnap a president of a country. Let me give you two thoughts here. He kidnapped a whole country, first of all. And secondly, he's not the president. He was voted out. He just wouldn't let the guy who was voted in come into office. So get a life, for God's sakes. This guy, the world is better off.
Yes, and I want to point this out. So I was chairman during the Osama bin Laden raid. We went into a country that was not against the United States. They're not always with us, but they weren't against the United States, Pakistan. We did a military operation, by the way, which I knew of prior to that event, and I supported it. And that was President Obama did that. Now, I didn't hear the Democrats say one thing. I thought it was the right thing. I came out and said it was the right thing. Why these? I mean, I think if Donald Trump came out with a cure for cancer, Democrats would be for cancer. It is the oddest thing I've ever seen. This is good for America. It makes our streets safer. And look at the effort across the board on getting after illegals committing crime, slowing down drugs coming to the United States. Murders down 20% around the country. We ought to celebrate that. This is the right thing to do.
Absolutely the right thing to do. Quick one. Pentagon censuring Mark Kelly, cutting his retirement pay over participation in that ridiculous video about following illegal orders. Quick thought.
You know, you do have a responsibility when you are a retired officer, when you use your rank to do something like they did was unconscionable to me. Think of this operation happening in Venezuela. Do you want five of the guys going down, starting to question orders? Can't happen. Military order. He should get reviewed at the Pentagon, and consequences should happen.
Well, the other thing is, you were a trustworthy person in your position as chairman of U.S. Intelligence Committee. You knew about that raid you were talking about before they did it. And of course you didn't leak it. We can't trust Congress to do that now. So the people say, why didn't they discuss it with Congress? Well, because it would be on the front page of the New York Times the next day.
And you know what? That's what gets people killed. I completely agree with their assessment. It was not trust for Congress. You have to earn that trust as a part of the oversight body back in Congress. Congress today is a nightmare. It's so partisan, so political. We got to change that. Send me back there, Paul, and I'll get it changed.
I want to send you back there. Mike Rogers, Republican Senate candidate. You look into what he has done, what he stands for, and what he will do, and you'll want to put him in to the United States Senate. Mike Rogers, best to you and Christie. I do hope you had a wonderful holiday. I know you're probably working, but I hope you guys had a nice time. Are you there, Mike? Well, we lost him. All right. We continue on the News Talk 760 WJR. Well, probably one of the biggest stories, certainly closing out 2025, was the whole conversation about data center projects. And we've gotten all kinds of pushback, and we think that that's going to be what's going to be discussed certainly throughout 2026 as well. No one better to talk to than the CEO of Aucom Technologies as we welcome back Brent Yaks. Brent, Happy New Year. Nice to have you here.
Happy New Year. Thanks for having me.
We have a lot of people that may agree we need data centers, may agree that the additional jobs and the additional technological power that we'll get from those data centers are all good, but they all also seem to fight it. Not in my backyard, kind of. It's like if they're all for wind power, they certainly they don't want the windmills in their backyard. You know what I'm saying. Can you liken this situation to anything else in history?
Well, you know, it's similar to, you know, think about when Amazon was expanding and they were trying to put distribution warehouses everywhere. We had the same fight. People want them, but they don't want them in my backyard. Think of the same thing in farms where you have roll-ups and these mega farms that get created. People don't want that in their backyard. So we see it over and over again when it gets to this huge scale type projects.
So here we are. And do you see a break in the acceptance level, or do you see this as being a real problem for anybody who wants to be opening an AI data center?
Well, I can tell you I'm kind of keeping an eye on what's happening in Saline, because they did have this kind of closed door settlement to allow the project to sort of move forward. Of course, it's still being fought there, but they did put in some interesting requirements, which is keep the sound levels really low, make sure that the lighting is not too much after dark. You know, all these things that I think everyone wants. So we'll see if there's a lot of pushback still now that that's on the table.
And the amount of power that they're going to use, the amount of water that they need, all of those things come into play. And people, rightfully so, need to be reassured that that's not going to affect their current quality of living.
And unfortunately, I mean, I don't think the track record bodes well for the data centers. You know, in other places where they've built these out, we have seen an impact in cost of utilities. We've seen a negative impact on water pressure. So, I mean, that's a real conversation, and we need some regulation around that. Otherwise, people are accurate. There will be an impact.
And do any of these people who are coming in and trying to buy land and work deals out, sometimes quietly, to be able to put in a data center, are any of them addressing these very real problems that you just mentioned, Brett Yaks, and that I brought up?
Yeah, so, I mean, they addressed it in Saline. So we know that when they had fought the zoning and then they went to appeals court, the settlement basically addressed a number of those items. We also know that there's a couple delays right now in a few townships where they're looking at what this possible impact could be. So they can try to put some of those clauses in any of the proposals or contracts that they take. So they are addressing them. We'll just see how good they're addressing them.
So who stands to benefit? I mean, overall, it would be argued we all stand to benefit with great data center usage. Certainly anybody who sells their land. But who else tends to benefit from these kinds of plans?
So there is a short-term benefit in the area in which they're building some of the centers. So they will employ 100 to 200 skilled trade people. So HVAC repair, electricians, construction, all these high-skilled trades that'll come in and actually build the facilities for a couple of years. So there's short-term impact there, and then a long-term impact of 30 or 40 people that are going to work the facilities. But other than that, it's questionable as to what the real long-term impact is. Besides the general, it's nice that the U.S. can add compute, and we could be a main player from an AI standpoint.
Well, that's what we're hoping. That's what the president already says we are, but we sometimes see indications otherwise. Are there situations like the one in Ann Arbor where the University of Michigan is moving forward on a land purchase for a facility with Las Alamos, the national laboratory? Are there things like that where there's partnerships where people might be very open to what U of M wants to do, but not so open to what if just Las Alamos National Laboratory stepped up and wanted to do this?
Yeah, and we'll see if there's more of those. The interesting one about Ann Arbor is that they took sort of a grant to be able to accelerate the progress of this, but now because of the, you know, anti-data center stance we're seeing in Southeast Michigan, they're actually fighting to pull that $100 million back. So I'm not sure how well that one's going to move if there's a big fight there, but I do see a lot of local partnerships like that. The U of M one's not even about AI. It's about mostly governmental work and data storage. So we'll see what happens with that, but it is interesting to see they're fighting on that one now too.
Well, I'll tell you what it is, Brent. Most of us don't understand what these things are for. And what you just said, we don't understand that and the difference between that and a hyperscale data center that people are looking for. I see a list here of some of the other biggest data center projects on the table in Michigan include Project Cannoli. The Irvine, California-based Panattoni Development Company planning to develop a 1 gigawatt data center on 180 acres in Wayne County's Van Buren Township. Southfield, Los Angeles-based Metroblocks LLC plans a $1.5 billion, 100,000-square-foot, 100-megawatt data center in Southfield. 32-mile technical campus, San Francisco-based company. I mean, the list goes on and on. And are they just coming here to cherry-pick because we still have what would be considered cheap land that they can't get where they usually are, where they're, most of these guys are out on the West Coast?
Well, there's a few reasons that I think they're coming here. You know, one is the fact that we do have infrastructure here. You know, keep in mind, these aren't the first data centers that are being built here. You know, back in my previous life, I designed some and retrofitted a number in Southfield, built a few in Troy. So we've had them for a long time. So we have infrastructure. But we also have cold temperature that can offset some cooling. We also have access to water, which really helps in these large-scale data centers to cool. So there's a number of resources here that we have that a lot of places can't compete with.
Well, and no one could blame us. In fact, we very well should fight to protect this this idea that we have some of the most fresh water in the world around Michigan, and we need to fight for that and protect it best we can. And I don't blame people for being concerned about that being cut into by all these data centers.
I agree, and that's why I like what's happening in Saline with some of the, you know, restrictions they put in place. What you're talking about is what we call evaporative cooling, and it just wastes a ton of water. So in Saline, they basically came out and said, we're not going to allow that to a certain percentage, and that's aimed at helping prevent the, you know, abundant use of that water.
So is somebody working, I would presume, on a way to show us how evaporative cooling can recapture some of that and use it again?
Well, there is that. So a number of people are making some advancements on how do you collect that. Normally, it just gets spread back out into the atmosphere, so there's not a very clear picture of what we saved. But there are also other technologies like closed-loop systems where you use much less water to still cool. And what we have in Michigan, which is great, is because a number of seasons it's really cold, we can use the environment to help chill as well. So we have advantages here that hopefully reduce the need for all that water.
All right, quick summary. Brent Yak, CEO of Aucom Technologies, what else should we look for in 2026?
It's all going to be about, you know, how the big project in Selene, which is the OpenAI Stargate project, it's going to be how that actually moves through, if there's more fighting on it, or if they can put together some great regulations that give us a way to move forward on some of these other projects.
All right. Well, we will depend on you from time to time to get more information like this. I hope your business is going well at Aucom.
It is, and thank you very much.
Brent Yaks, the CEO of Aucom Technologies, a number of AI data center projects planned for 2026. There's been pushback from multiple communities, but we're watching the ones that might happen and see if we can learn a little something about how they can happen and how they can operate without causing us a bunch of trouble, that we can actually benefit from these centers. That's, I guess, the bottom line. We've got another hour to go. We're going to go out to Las Vegas and speak to Guy Gordon at the Consumer Electronics Show coming up. Well, with it being rainy, foggy, dark, at least that's the way we started off the day in the show.
This it's gotten foggier and darker.
Oh, great. Well, then this is even more important to you, to all of us. And Kim pointed it out to me, because what better day than today to be National Cuddle Day? Now, there's no cuddling in the booth or in the studio. I know.
Keeping it professional.
Yeah. But National Cuddle Day falls on January 6th for a very important reason. Since January has some of the coldest temperatures of the year, it's a great excuse to warm up by cuddling with those closest to you. Plus, if you've got a fireplace and cozy blankets, which we don't in the studio or in the booth there, it's even better. With you, find a partner, get ready to cuddle. Okay, that's fine. Can be a full-time job. Cuddling can be a full-time job. There are cuddle clinics popping up around the U.S.?
Yeah, I've seen stories like that where, yeah, there's professional cuddlers.
They're called certified cuddlers.
What kind of degree you got to get to have that job?
I don't know. After researching relationships for more than 40 years, John Gottman found that cuddling is seventh on his list of the top 13 things couples need to do for a great whoopee life.
Oh, I see.
Uh-huh. Research has shown that oxytocin, the incredible cuddle hormone, can help regenerate muscle tissue in mice. So if you want muscular mice, cuddle them.
Cuddle your mice
mice, ladies and gentlemen.
If you want your mouse to win Mr. Universe, cuddle it.
And cuddling is effective for warming your body and your heart. And this feel-good hormone offers tremendous health benefits. All right. Well, it strengthens relationships. Cuddling is good. We know that.
Sure.
And even a hug should be 20 seconds. If you do a 20-second hug, or if you're kissing for 20 seconds, I think that's the magic number.
Yeah.
For the best results.
The stopwatch takes away some of the romance, but
it is hard. You know, and Kim tells me, you know, I got the stopwatch in my hand, and I'm going, all right, let's kiss.
Right.
No, don't stop. Keep kissing.
Five.
Okay, 20 seconds. Yeah. Good, we're done.
Speaking of warm and fuzzy, Paul, did you see last night, number one, Tom Izzo got his 750th win?
I saw that. I couldn't like Tom Izzo any more than I already love him. Well, I love him.
And then I guess that there was a fan who got ejected from the game. He wouldn't leave, so the referee went over to Tom Izzo and said, can you help me get this fan out of here? Because the fan was a former player of his from 20 years ago. So Tom Izzo looks over into the stands at his former player. I forgot his name. And you can read his lips. He says, what the bleep are you doing? And then he tells the guy that he's got to leave the game. the referee went over to Tom Izzo and asked for his help in kicking out the fan because he used to be one of Izzo's players. It was hilarious.
I have the story. I don't know if I can get to it quickly, but it's Izzo lets ex-star Paul Davis have it.
That's it.
After ejection. He was 150% wrong, according to Tom.
And look, after the
game. I didn't see it. I didn't hear it. I'm just now hearing about it.
Well, and after the game, you know, Izzo was still, he was still coach. He said, look, he didn't say anything racial. He didn't say anything explicit, but he said something that you shouldn't say to a referee, and he'll call me and say, Coach, I was wrong. So he was kind of sticking up for the guy afterwards, but once a coach, always a coach, and you know, that just shows what a great molder of men he is, even 20 years later.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I bet you, I guarantee you that every player that ever played for him still refers to him as coach, mm-hmm. and still respects him. And if he asked them to run into a brick wall, they would run into a brick wall.
Absolutely.
I believe that. Now I'm trying to, here it is. This was an interesting story. Apparently somebody on the Skybridge, we were supposed to broadcast from the Skybridge a long time ago. I don't know whatever happened, but somebody was on the Skybridge and proposing, and the ring, how does this happen? The ring falls through the Skybridge down to the snow.
It's at point, 150 feet down to the snow from the Skybridge.
So this Rochester Hills man who got engaged on the Skybridge, Michigan at Boyne, nearly had the proposal ruined when the ring slipped through his fingers and through the gate, falling that 118 feet to the snow below. According to Boyne Mountain, Trevor Van Camp had planned the surprise weekend, dropped down to one knee on the Skybridge, proposing to his girlfriend, Danielle Jenkins. However, with shaking hands, I understand, Van Camp pulled the ring from the box and it slipped from his grasp, falling through the open grating into the ski slope below. They panicked, and then they said, we need to find it. They spent 2.5 hours searching the slopes with metal detectors. Pat Harper, the night shift snowmaking supervisor at Boyne, thankfully had the metal detectors. He just happened to have metal detectors in his car. And shortly after giving up hope around 10 p.m., Harper's metal detector picked up a signal. He then began digging through the snow, didn't see anything. Then Harper pulled up a handful of snow and found the edge of the ring in it. As the couple prepared to leave Boyne, they got a call that the ring had been found.
Wow, what a relief.
Isn't that something? That's a good, that's a feel-good end of the story story.
Well, and I guess the family now refers to him as Butterfingers.
You know, we used to employ a drummer for moments just like that.
But, well, that wasn't a zinger. They really, the story I saw on TV, they call them Butterfingers now.
Oh, they do?
Yeah.
Well, it's still a drummer.
I got to tell you, though, Paul, one time I dropped Chelsea's keys into the snow, couldn't find them. Looked for 2 days. You know when I found them? After we paid for a brand
spring.
New...
In the spring.
No, after, about 10 minutes after we paid for a brand new key fob, like $200, then
of
we found them in the snow.
Always the way it works. If I say to you, I can't find this story, can you resend it? And, and the minute you resend, I go, never mind, I found it. So, there's something about that.
Never fails.
That's where that Murphy Law thing comes in.
Right.
You know, I think those... Kias and Hyundais look very good on the outside. So they've spent a lot of time on the fit and finish. And I think they have maybe a 10-year, 100,000-mile warranty or something.
One of our cars is a Kia.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So what do you think of that? Because it says over 51,000 Hyundai Tucson SUVs have been recalled.
Well, it's a Kia, so it's not a Hyundai, but it's fine.
But aren't they the same, Hyundais and Kias?
They could be. I mean, a lot of Lincolns are Fords and Fords are Lincolns and stuff. But, the Kia's fine. I mean, it's nothing fancy, but it gets you from point A to point B. We've only had to fix it maybe once.
My sister came to visit and had a rental car, and I can't remember. I think it was a Kia. And I said, boy, that's a beautiful-looking car. She goes, yeah, but it's cheap on the inside. That's what she felt.
No.
Because, on the outside, I didn't get in it, but on the outside, it looked pretty good, like fit and finish, which they've learned is maybe a way to sell us cars. I don't know.
Right.
Anyway, I'm glad to see that though GM had a tough fourth quarter, they overall in 25 they did well, and I do believe with the government sticking their nose out of the car business is going to do better. That's what I believe. No comment?
Well, we talked about it earlier where, you know, once they pivoted away from the electronic vehicles, trying to force demand on that and made the decision to go with hybrids,
listened to their dealers.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it's always better to listen to the consumers than mandates.
Absolutely right. All right. We're going to hear about some pretty exciting things happening out in Vegas at the Consumer Electronics Show. The one and only Guy Gordon, who's been there a few times. I went there in the very beginning. Then Frank went there. Now Guy had taken over. So we've stayed on top of that Consumer Electronics Show. And it's gone through a lot of changes. We'll talk about some of those. Coming up next, Focus with Paul W. Smith on WJR. Well, the tradition continues. WJR has covered the Consumer Electronics Show like no one else there in Vegas. It's underway, and the one and only Guy Gordon, our WJR tech correspondent, is out there once again. Guy, Happy New Year. I hope you had a nice holiday. You and Gail had a wonderful time visiting
with
family and friends.
Yeah, lots of good time with the grandkids. And now, you know, what better way to kick off the new year than getting to demo the latest and greatest new technology.
Yeah, we're all ears. WJR CES Report with Guy Gordon is brought to you by Scheffler and Gentex. The one thing I noticed from a note you had earlier, Guy, is that the big three are not there, but the Chinese autos are and maybe others. But remember the time when the big three were there so much they had Alan Mulally as the speaker, the keynote speaker, twice? And we thought, oh, my God, they're going to hurt our Detroit Auto Show, then known as the North American International Auto Show. So now you're telling me it's a complete turnaround and none of our American car makers are there?
We have, it's crazy. The companies, the automotives that are here are the ones that can't sell their vehicles in the United States. It's Great Wall Motors from China. It's Geely. It's BYD. They know you've got journalists from over 200 countries here, so they still want to show at CES, even though they can't sell their products in the United States. And yes, you know, when you and I first started coming here, GM, Ford, and Chrysler, Stellantis wanted to rebrand themselves as technology companies. And they've apparently abandoned that, at least within this context. Now, their suppliers are here showing some really incredible stuff. Tier 2 people are here showing incredible stuff. And the autonomous automobile, that really got kickstarted with a new chip from NVIDIA that was announced in the past 12 hours. And it will bring a GPU that is 5 times more powerful than what the predecessor was. And that can do great things in an automotive context for autonomy.
We have breaking news with Guy Gordon, our WJR tech correspondent, live from the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. And you talk about autonomous driving, getting that kickstart from the leap of the A1 AI processing and learning. And you say something about a windshield from LG that's pretty amazing.
My God. This is incredible. So, Paul, imagine if you could take a very thin Mylar video screen that is transparent, but you can transpose video elements into it, and you place it between, let's say, 2 panes of glass and make a windshield out of it. Now, it's totally transparent when you're in manual driving. Important information will be illuminated in that windshield smartly, so it's not a distraction. Vehicle conditions, the weather at your destination, weather you may encounter during your drive, blind spot. You can see your blind spot will be illuminated in the lower part of your windshield. It will track your eyes to make sure you're keeping your eyes on the road and give you alerts on the windshield if you get distracted. So all that happens in a manual context, including navigational cues. Now, it's no longer transparent when you're in fully autonomous mode because you don't need to look outside. So now you can take a video call, talk to your kids, do a business meeting, watch a movie, play games. Or one of the things they showed is that as you go into a tunnel, it will turn the walls of the tunnel into like a fairy universe with virtual reality. And it's crazy. And I've got a video of it on our website at WJR.com where I walk you through their demonstration. Really well done by LG. But it gives you a window, no pun intended, into what our future is.
I got to tell you, I never say never. That's what I say, never say never. I can't imagine flipping a switch so that I can't see out anymore and I have an opaque windshield. Even though I'm not driving, I still like to know. If I get behind a truck now and can't see what's in front of me, it bothers me. I like to know what's going on. But maybe that'll all change when the car is doing all of the thinking and all of the driving. And something that we've talked about around here before is the road surfaces and what role they will play. And I understand there's now some kind of software that can monitor the road surface.
So I was talking to some experts about this. And remember when we talked about smart roads, that we were going to turn Michigan Avenue and you're going to be able to charge your vehicle and your vehicle would talk to the infrastructure.
Right.
Because you cannot monetize it, because you can't get the financing for it from municipalities or governments, because of the costs involved, that's kind of been abandoned. But what they are talking about now is onboard sensors that will do the warnings for you. Or through navigation apps, you will be able to warn that, hey, there's ice here. AAA, there are agencies that are collecting all that data, and they will send it to your car and warn you on road to your trip. But there's also going to be sensors in the car that can warn you when you're in danger of hydroplaning, for instance, when your tires are no longer dispersing the water the way they need to. And it will rejigger the driving characteristics, slow you down a little bit, so that it will preemptively do this even before you can react. And that will keep you from going into a spin.
Fabulous. Guy Gordon out at the Consumer Electronics Show in Vegas, live with us right now. And for people who wondered why, with all that area on top of a roof, we weren't trying to take advantage of it with the sun. Apparently, there are some new solar panels for the roof of your car.
They're solar injected, and part of the problem was is that
what's that mean? What does that mean?
Well, so you can bend the solar cells easier. You can put them into a roof line that can be put on top of an existing roof line. It will be easier, not so many design compromises, not so many manufacturing compromises with injection molding. And so that's kind of the new wrinkle there. I'm curious, and I haven't seen it yet or seen the demonstration, just how much power you're going to be able to squeeze out of a panel that size and whether it's going to meaningfully change, you know, the range of your vehicle, or it'll probably drive maybe some of the onboard telematics and things like that, or maybe give you some backup power. I'm curious as to really how much it's going to enhance what you've got in EV. But it was an interesting piece of tech that they're showing here for the first time.
WJR's Consumer Electronics Show in Vegas with Guy Gordon, brought to you by Scheffler and Gentex. And I understand Gentex has improved the Humble windshield visor.
Oh my gosh. And it's so simple in its concept. When you bring down the windshield visor now, you lose vision space, right? The top part of your vision is going to be obstructed. They now have transparent window visors that are adjustable to eliminate glare. It can also act as a vanity mirror if you want it to. It is like three things in one. We're going to be taking a look at it about 15 minutes from now. And Gentex also, I got to tell you, this is a company that's very vision oriented. They've also got glasses and headsets now for the visually impaired. And tomorrow, Paul, we're going to talk about how we make people with disabilities and improve their lives through technology. That may be the most underreported and most interesting story I see here at CES, that as we get older, how we make aging more tolerable, and for the disabled, how we make life more livable.
We'll be anxious for that tomorrow here in Focus with Guy. I guess the tech sector must be anticipating rolling blackouts, because apparently home energy storage systems are the rage, more so than generators.
So that's, well, they're actually, you know, a lot of folks can't afford a whole home generator. What we're seeing is generators of varying sizes, some as small as a toaster, that let's say you have a blackout. You can plug your fridge into that and you can get 6 hours of power. And by the end of that, hopefully the power will be back on. And it's scalable. So if you need more time than that, you can get supplemental battery modules and you can patch those on. You can also put it on wheels and take it to a tailgate and power your TV and maybe make pancakes, you know, whatever you want to do. So it can serve a variety of lifestyle things. But it's, yeah, they must know something we don't, because home battery storage is the rage here. And we've got a video on that as well at WJR.com.
We'll look at WJR.com. Finally, and very quickly, because I got to know, what in the world, Guy, is the Skin Smart Shower?
So, yes, there are interesting technologies here, and then there are things that are so indulgent and so over the top that they're just dumb. If this is a shower that will assess whether or not your skin is properly hydrated, Paul, and then it will adjust the pH of the water that will shower down upon you, maybe inject some hydrating ingredients into that so that your skin will get a treatment while you're taking a shower. I can't imagine. I mean, you and I would just ask our spouses, hey, could you slap some goo on my back so that I'm not itching so much?
Or how much is that? But that's another story.
Exactly.
Guy Gordon, we'll look forward to talking with you tomorrow, our WJR tech correspondent and the Consumer Electronics Show report with Guy in Vegas live, brought to you by Scheffler and Gentex. Have fun. It looks like you've got some more great things lined up for you coming up in just a few minutes, Guy. Thanks.
All right. We'll see you on JR Afternoon and tomorrow on Focus.
We continue on WJR. As we continue, we are happy to welcome back Vice President of the Detroit Regional Chamber and Mish Auto Executive Director, Glenn Stevens. Glenn, I hope you had a fabulous holiday and you've hit the ground running in this new year.
I did, Paul, and happy New Year to you and Kim and the WJR team. It's great to talk to you.
Well, God bless you for that. Got a quick question based on what we just spoke with Guy Gordon about at the Consumer Electronics Show in Vegas. I'll never forget when the Big Three started showing up out there, and they had Alan Mulally 2 years in a row as the keynote speaker, and a lot of people said, oh, boy, what's this going to do to the, at that time, called the North American International Auto Show? And yet Guy tells me this year, none of the Big Three are there. That's obviously a decision they made to not go out there. Can you give me any background on that?
Well, I'm not there this year, but I have been many times in the past. And I remember going a long time ago when they first started to go. I think it's absolutely about where your strategic resource is going to be deployed. You know, what are you going after with product and market? And that is not an inexpensive proposition. But I think, you know, it's been a very bitch of a transition year in 2025 and a lot of pullback on EV and things like that. And I think they've got some pretty big things in Detroit next week. I know Ford does, and I'm sure the others do too. So that's how we see it right now.
Well, let's face it, in his first year back in the White House, President Trump has made good on campaign promises related to the auto industry that's made it easier and better for them. He slashed the emission regulations. He ended the federal support for electric vehicles and rained tariffs down on trade-reliant automakers and suppliers in a bid to reshore manufacturing capacity. So there's a lot of stuff that he did that's making their lives easier and better. Do you think, what would you say in your position, Glenn Stevens, as the vice president of the Detroit Regional Chamber and Mish Auto, what would you say would be left for the Trump administration to pursue on automotive policy that you would be looking forward to?
Well, there's no question that last year was quite a ride. And the way the year started back on January 20th with the issuance of the America First Trade Policy Act with tariffs, you know, I think things settled in over the year. And we certainly knew that there were going to be changes. And yes, there were benefits to the industry, no question about it, for the short term. But when you look at 2026, I think there's a few things that are out there. And the big one is USMCA. Where does that shake out? You know, is it renewed? Is it improved? Is it put on hold? Does one of the three partners walk away? We don't know yet. But whatever does happen, it is going to shape trade policy for many years and decades to come. The second thing is there's a lot of policy stuff out there still with regards to autonomous vehicle, you know, potentially for a national standard for which we do need that. We need some controls and guardrails on that technology. And then there's also some safety technology policy work. So there's quite a bit in front of us still in 2026.
What about our relationship with Canada?
Well, you know, I was actually talking with somebody in Lansing about that today. And that relationship is still, you know, not in great shape. And a lot of it does depend on how does USMCA shake out? Is there a separate trade agreement with Canada and or Mexico like there have been with other countries? But we definitely have healing that needs to happen with our relationship with our neighbors. And I think things are calm and settled. We do have some pretty positive and big news coming because right around the corner is the opening of the Gordie Howe Bridge. And that'll be an opportunity for us to celebrate our partnership. But hopefully calmer heads will prevail on the trade front, too.
We just heard from Guy out there in Vegas that the autonomous vehicles are front and center once again, being talked about quite a bit. And the current administration has recently sought to, quote, remove barriers to the United States AI leadership via an executive order. They promised to update the nation's regulations around self-driving vehicles. What are we in the auto industry looking for from your vantage point as the vice president of the Detroit Regional Chamber and Mish Auto executive director?
Well, you know, I heard Guy early this morning, also his report. I was texting with him this morning about what he's seeing out there. And, you know, there's no question. I wouldn't say that the AV technology has come full circle because some companies have not stopped in the pursuit, Waymo being one of them. But, you know, there's still a lot of investment being put towards that, both on the AI front, the chip front, and then the technology deployment. And, you know, we have Waymo coming to Detroit, which is significant. I think, you know, what we're looking for, you know, from the White House and from an industry standpoint is as much consistency that we can get in policy and trade in policy regarded to AI and things like that, because the industry thrives on that. And last year was quite an unstable year. But Michigan has to lead in all these things. We can't be standing still. And while we have short-term stabilization with a lot of this policy, we have to look at the long view of what are we going to be evolving into as an industry too.
One of these controversial rules that's been around a while, and I don't know what's been happening, if anything, but the automatic emergency braking technology in all new vehicles by 2029. The president said in January of 24, his administration saying they'd review the rule, but I'm not aware that they've articulated a position on the topic yet. Have they?
They have not, and that is one of the policy, you know, the safety aspects that I was referring to earlier. There are mixed, you know, opinions on that. Some trade groups are for that, some are against it, but it is a technology that is available. It is available to be mass commercialized. It would be for all new vehicles, I believe, starting in 2029. Obviously, you can't retrofit for things like that in the aftermarket. But that is something that we're watching for this year in 2026.
Well, our suppliers, whether it be Lear or any number of others that are our hometown businesses as well, just as important to us as any business possibly could be, the suppliers have come up with some pretty cool technology. It was some time ago. Frankly, I can't remember who it was, to tell you the truth, but I remember them putting me in a car and saying, "We want you to drive toward that wall." And I said, and then what? And they said, just drive toward that wall. And I went, okay. And I drove toward that wall, and the car automatically braked. And that was that was more than a couple of years ago. So some of this technology exists. I'm sorry?
Oh, no, I'm sorry to interrupt. It definitely is commercially available and viable. It's just not mandated. Yeah.
But you would think that there'd be companies, the OEMs or others, that would say, okay, we're the first on the block to have this, and this is why it's important, unless there was a flaw that none of us knew about at the time. I have no idea. I never followed it because it was several years ago, and that was that.
Well, I think the key here is what safety technology can be put at an affordable standpoint, too. Remember, all this does cost money, and the average price of a vehicle is already over $50,000. But if we can put technology, you know, whether it's this or there's also an open issue about some about anti-drunken driving technology being put into vehicles. That's another one we're watching. But if this can save lives, and you referenced it, yes, the OEMs design and engineer and R&D a lot of it, but most of the technology in the R&D comes from those companies, the suppliers you mentioned. Yeah. And a lot of it done here in Michigan.
It sure is. We have, let's face it, we have lots to be proud of. And some of that got overshadowed by some of the overwhelming controls that this president appears to be lifting and letting the market be the market again. And I think that's probably very good for all of us. Glenn,
but
last,
let's hope
go
so.
Ahead. Go ahead. Say
no,
last
let's
thought.
Hope so, Paul. No, I just wanted to thank you for your time today. And hopefully this will be a productive and a good year for Michigan's auto industry.
Got our fingers crossed, Glenn. Keep up the good work, my friend. Glenn Stevens, Vice President of the Detroit Regional Chamber and Mich Auto Executive Director, with a look toward 26 as we get closer and closer, of course, to the Detroit Auto Show, where you'll see a lot of good things. We continue in Focus with Paul W. Smith right here on WJR. Boy, the 2 hours goes by very quickly, and don't forget, you can always stream us if you can't get us in on the radio wherever you are, if you're around the country, around the world, and that's all at WJR.com. That's also where you find our podcast. When you go to WJR.com and you look at the bottom of the page, there'll be a thing that says podcast, then look for me, Paul W. Smith, and Focus, and listen at your convenience whenever you can. We will do our best to give you relentless positive radio, like right now, as you're on your way to making each and every day count, because each day indeed is a gift. And then also I want to thank you for choosing to be a part of the best and brightest audience in all of radio. The team, Mike Parsons, Danielle Mason, Rich Luzinski. I should ask you this off the air, but we're with family here. Do you prefer Michael or Mike?
I've always been Mike.
I thought so too.
Yeah.
I don't know. In the new year, I started calling you Michael.
Really? I haven't noticed yet, but...
I introduced you at the beginning of the show. I say Michael Parsons.
Maybe that's why I felt like I was in trouble, because that's what my mom would call me if I was in trouble.
All right, you're not in trouble. let's see here. The about 2,000 federal agents being deployed to Minneapolis as part of the Trump administration's latest immigration crackdown. Now, this comes as the city grapples with the welfare fraud scandal after a content creator posted a video accusing Somali-run daycare centers in Minneapolis of misusing child care funds. I don't know him at all.
Oh, what was his name? Yeah.
But he did a good job. I mean, he basically went around to all these child care facilities that were supposed to be active, and there was no one there at any of them. Now, the first thought I had was, well, did he do that during the holiday break? But I don't believe that was the case, because the people would have said it in their defense. They would have said, well, it was a holiday.
Yeah. So, Nick Shirley, 23-year-old independent YouTube journalist. And I actually think that this video was made a while ago. But it resurfaced somehow.
Well, it's a big deal, because it has kind of introduced us to what might be the tip of the iceberg, not just in Minneapolis, but any number of places. I mean, we've all known where there's a lot of money, there's a lot of chance that there might be fraudulent activity. This kid just proved it. But unfortunately, I'm afraid if we start digging around in virtually every state with that kind of money being thrown at, in this case, child care and whatever else it might have been thrown at, we might have ourselves a big problem. But that's okay if we fix it and stop wasting the money. Maybe eventually someone's going to say we can reduce or do away with certain taxes. I mean, the fact of the matter is that we accept having our money taxed more than once is ridiculous. Meaning, money that you make that's taxed and then you put into some various investment projects or investment things, then it's taxed when it comes out again? That doesn't make sense. And I heard the again and again that Social Security wouldn't be taxed, but I haven't seen it. Have you? Have you heard anything else or seen anything else?
No, but
I know that you're far from Social Security, but some of us are not.
I mean, I'll just be thrilled if Social Security is still there when I need it.
Believe me, I said that when I was your age, and yet it's still there.
That's comforting.
I don't know how much longer. I have no idea. Danielle, is that something that you also worry about? Because I think it is something that all of a sudden becomes a worry when we're young, but we look ahead.
About Social Security, about not having it?
Yeah. Do you think it will be around when it's time for
you?
No,
I don't think it will be around. No. See, that's why I'm putting money into an IRA, into a 401k.
Good for you. And that's what you should do.
Can I borrow some money after I turn 65, Danielle?
Nope.
And you know, if you guys can get those Roth IRAs, something I never was able to get, and I still don't understand why, but if you put money into a Roth IRA regularly for just a certain period of time, there are people online telling you this all the time. You put that money in there and you leave it alone, which is what I keep stressing to my children, leave it alone, the power of compounding interest, when you are 60, 65, whatever, it could be incredibly valuable to you. Now, and people say, well, yeah, so it's worth $1 million, but a loaf of bread will cost $10,500. No, it won't. Yes, there will be inflation. Yes, there will be. But it's way better off if you are putting money aside, especially money that you can withdraw tax-free, something no one ever explained to me growing up. You want that money to be tax-free because the tax implications, and in my case, complications, are a real pain and really cut into what you thought you were going to have when you retired. Okay, more on that Swiss bar. This is not good news. You know, the bar that was devastated, the deadly fire New Year's Eve?
Yeah, it started where they were, they had like...
These Roman candles like on top of the champagne.
Champagne bottles, right.
And the waiters and waitresses... The wait staff, whatever you want to call them, put them up in the air like, you know, the way they're celebrating.
Right.
They're touching the roof and creating some kind of a weird hyper fire problem so that everything just kind of caught on fire at once. But they had not, here's the bottom line, they had not been inspected in 5 years.
And they probably did that, you know, whatever trick they were doing with the sparklers and the champagne bottles. A million times, night after
night. Maybe, but maybe not as big. I don't know. The place was called Le Constellation. 40 people died in that blaze.
Wow.
Hadn't been inspected since 2020. And the council bitterly regrets the lapse and added, quote, "We will shoulder all the responsibility that the justice system attributes to us." Well, that's odd. This is the guy from the Crana, Montana Council. I don't even know what that is. But it's not the owner of the facility, I don't think.
Huh.
But here's somebody stepping up and saying, we will shoulder all of the responsibility the authorities say we should.
Right. Is that criminal? Is that being sued? Or is it just an empty, statement?
I don't know. It's a little cynical to think of it as an empty statement. But
I
don't blame you. I don't blame you. But maybe it's not. But I honestly don't know.
Well, hopefully there'll be
next.
Right. Hopefully there'll be changes so that it doesn't happen again. That's the best you can hope for in a situation like this.
The New York Times, which now lives as a not so good newspaper, when I say that, I'll stand up to anybody on this. Take a New York Times from 10, 20 years ago, and it's such a better paper. I'm not talking about their politics. I'm talking about the errors in grammar and spelling and the things you never saw in the New York Times you see now. But they also now spend all their time they possibly can refuting and putting down President Trump. It's just very obvious. So, I mean, why else would you do this story? You know, the president has been against windmills, and he comes up with all these reasons, and one of them he throws out there is that they're killing all these birds. So leave it to the New York Times to care about that and try to refute what the president said. So here's what is in the New York Times. Wind energy accounts for less than 1 in 10,000 human-caused bird fatalities. Like, none of us were thinking about that, but they are, because the president has free space in their brains and their kitchen. he's in there, and they can't get rid of him. So
gotta save the birds.
They say 1 in 10,000 human-caused bird fatalities because of those windmills, which is significantly less than buildings, cats, or oil pits. Well, then maybe we should get rid of oil pits, cats, and buildings.
That'll do it.
I don't know. I hear the music. Where did it all go? We got to go. Regards, Paul W. Smith.